I must admit that it looks like I am either going overboard or have gone overboard with the smiling dragon thesis. But such is definitely not the case. If anything, I have done and said far too little to plumb the depths of that darkened soul. One can hardly overstate its importance when examining the wreckage which it has left behind. But because I have been speaking mainly in simile and metaphor up to this point, perhaps I should stop for a moment and speak more plainly. Within each human is a something other than self. Everybody seems to recognize it, and all poets and artists revel in it. Those who dare to openly discuss the other within themselves show that we are here dealing with a rather difficult subject. Let's take a closer look to see just what it is and isn't. Most people would refer to it as the self, or the inner self, or the inner child, or other words to that effect. We are taught to become familiar with this person and to listen to its needs. While much is written on this subject, and why wouldn't you expect so in an entirely extreme narcissistic society at large, it's all about me, or I did it my way, or my way or the highway, etc., etc. But what I am positing here is that within each of us is another. I am not talking about demon possession or obsession. I am talking about primary structures within the mind of every single man and woman on the planet. Just as there is something known as antimatter, which corresponds with matter, so it seems each self has an anti-self, sharing the same physical and psychical container with the self. Freud spoke at length of ego, id, and superego. Ego is your most basic mental construct. Id is your mental image of yourself. And the superego is the regulator of the baser desires, which are ever presently lurking within the shadows of the mind, just below the surface, and ever ready to explode out at any given moment, given the right circumstances. It is the Lord of the Flies writ large, because this creature, which lurks right below the surface, comes exploding out every so often in rampant and aggressive, profoundly criminal behavior, and that on an hourly and daily basis, at great cost to numerous individuals and to society itself. It has become a matter for much scholarly debate. Most discount evil altogether, all too quickly. A strange belief indeed, given the attendant facts. One can only wonder whether they are blinded by their anti-self. For above all else, this anti-self does its best work when its presence is not known or even suspected. So it tries to keep a low profile. It tries to hide back in the shadows from which arise nightmares and numerous projections of self onto objects and other persons surrounding us. We give personality not just to our cars and cameras and plants and animals, but in much the same manner, we project our personality and deep hidden wishes onto everyone around us. Hence, our personal relationships closely resemble those with a pet rock. It is also just about equal, short-lasting, and very non-fulfilling over time. It's really scary when you think about it, because you really do not know anyone like you think you do. This is why so many marriages and relationships so miserably fail. As the two live together, they soon find out that it is not just the two of them sitting together in the room, but rather at least two others. Because each self has brought along its anti-self and likely other parts of the mental processes which have broken off from the integrated whole of the psyche. If these persons or other selves are incompatible with one another, then there will be constant friction. Finally, a breaking point is reached beyond which the amygdala and limbic system shut down and physically refuse to take part in the continuation of these psychic processes. Now, each party will become enraged in the presence of the other without either understanding why. As huge amounts of voltage pump into the amygdala, which is well documented as causing violent rage. Just as if one touches it with an electric probe, which has nearly the same effect as is being produced by this voltage from another source. The limbic system has been now so overloaded for so long that it is beginning to break down. The mere presence of one another now provokes an uncontrollable rage caused reflexively by the autonomic nervous system with very precise instructions encoding by etching them into the tissue within the amygdala. They are then sent directly to the action-initiating centers of the brain by direct wiring, so that no time is wasted in thinking as a speeding car is about to slam into you. Instead, you just react. Well, this is the system which makes that happen. But now, the heretofore unknown, hidden, camouflaged, and disguised anti-self has come out into the open and has physically caused a profound transformation of the love system into fight-flight, provoked by the very same person as I once loved. It is this anti-self, which I am referring to as the dragon. The dragon is the dragon of grandiosity. It is our grandiose self to which I allude. That part of us which will all too readily climb up on a pedestal and allow itself to effectively be worshipped, or that callously takes the life of another, or rapes, or robs, or says hateful, spiteful things to those whom it claims to love. To all self-abusive behaviors and angry and unloving thoughts, deeds, and actions. The part of us which can very easily see me being president, or even world ruler, or why not universal ruler, while I'm at it. The part of us that can imagine us doing great things and filling the history books with our wonderful doings, or imagining myself to be a rock star when I am not and never will be, but acting like it and demanding of everyone around me that they treat me as adoring fans rather than as equals. Or the senator who looks in the mirror and sees the future president of the United States. Only he is the only one who ever does or has. And he will just be one of 99 other total has-been wannabes who will be quickly forgotten within days of their departure. These things do not operate in a vacuum. They do not stand alone in some magnificent isolation. And they do have serious consequences to the psyche possessing all of these cosmic fantasies, as well as all who now must be exposed to the rotten, poisonous fruits which have come forth fully formed. From this system of fantasy creation, followed by projection and then demanding that all comply with my wishes as to how things ought to be, the consequences are often devastating and fatal to not a few. It is this fearful monster lurking within, nearly always just below the surface, rising above the surface for only moments at a time in order to keep the mask of sanity intact for just a little while longer, as predator moves in on its unwary prey. To the grandiose self, all others are here to serve us. They are here to serve our needs and fulfill our desires, no matter how debased and degrading. Their fellow humans have become permanently objectified. They are merely objects to be pushed around on some grand cosmic chessboard. They are my means to obtain my ends and little more. There is no conscience, and any remorse is not often felt, and certainly will not last for more than a few minutes at most. A truly dreadful creature, risen up out of some unholy, hellish pit. Say hello to the anti-self, the abrogation of all that you claim to stand for, the opposite of everything you claim to believe in, the unbelievable criminality which can be exhibited at any moment, given the right opportunity. Say good morning to your other self, the child which has been locked in the basement and can be heard to be howling on certain otherwise quiet nights. No one is supposed to know that he is there, locked up, but just looking for and waiting for the opportunity to escape, and then to wreak havoc everywhere it goes as it mercilessly consumes and destroys all that is unfortunate enough to cross its path. While it is unbridled and unhampered, it is this force which I believe is in every one of us, unspoken and very hidden, which I speak of as the dragon of grandiosity, or just the dragon. It seems as though for every psychological self-reinforcing force, there is a counter and opposing force. If I say, do thus and so, many persons' first inclination will be to say, no, or let it not be so, or I will actively stop this from happening. If instead I say, do not do thus and so, many will be immediately heard to be saying, why not? What is so wrong with that? Why can't I do it? By what right or authority do you say such a thing? And why or who are you to speak down to me? I think I will do it, just because you have told me not to. These forces can be seen to be ever present, simply by telling someone, anyone, that they must or must not do something. These are psychological balancing forces. They are attempting to restore mental homeostasis, a balanced mind. As the brain is so powerfully open to suggestion, and thus is extremely vulnerable to it, the brain automatically counters with the opposite, forcibly, so that one is confronted with facts to balance the fantastical overflights of the imagination, which take place nearly continuously, and which can so readily be seen during the REM, rapid eye movement, stage of sleep, every night, for most people. But if one follows the wild swing of the pendulum in the opposite direction, forcibly, then they suddenly become vulnerable to attack from the direction in which they are moving. All their inner opponent, the dragon, need do now is continue pushing them in the new direction, without allowing them to restore their internal harmony and balance. Remember, the dragon always wants to get out of his lair and fly around and wreak havoc on a grand scale. The dragon will continuously push the inner self toward the breaking point so that he may dominate, even if only for one grand moment. He is ever vigilant for opportunity to escape out of anything which dares to even attempt to shackle or restrain him. So when he sees the opportunity, he will move swiftly. So when I say yes, and you say no, instead of providing a counterbalance, with some sort of median being the ultimate goal, Instead, my inner dragon begins to perseverate and pontificate until my entire conscious mental apparatus is engaged in a discussion of why I should not do or should do any given thing, when it is the contrary to the request being made or to the demand being made. Balance cannot be restored so long as I perseverate. And every moment that I do so, my deep inner grandiose self begins to take center stage, as all of a sudden, whatever it is all about me and mine and my. All else has become subsidiary. Oh, and by the way, I have some really strange needs. Now, I say yes, you say no. It's all about me. Me, me, me. My, my, my. I say no. You say yes, yes, yes. It's all about me. Me, me, me. My, my, my. I say do. You say no, I won't. It's all about me. Me, me, me. My, my, my. I say, don't. You say, yes, I will. It's all about me. Me, me, me. My, my, my. And life, and conversation, and intellectual pursuit have all been reduced to this level, as ultra-narcissism and borderline personality disorder have run amok. Now, not one dragon, but millions of other dragons, all nesting together in huge dragon nests, in huge cavernous lairs, which we call cities. You are surrounded by dragons on every side. All will flatter. All will pretend to wish you well. All will claim to be the best friend you ever had. All will claim that they would lay down their very life for you. But it will never be so. Because these are all vain, empty words, and full of vile and deceit, and not worthy to be listened to, and even less so to be reflected upon, for they are dust and ashes picked up by the wind and dispersed. To them, you are merely a means to an end, a stepping stone on their path to success, or the fulfillment of their fantasies, yours and my nightmares. In reality, you are as nothing to them. But they will never, in 10,000 years, even give a hint of the true state of facts, rather inducing you into a stuporous, hypnotic trance, so they may ultimately do with you as they please and dispose of you however they choose. They are evil, malignant sores, or is it spores? They are dreadful and frightening, yet they are all around us and among us, nearly every moment of every waking hour. This cannot be a good thing. The dragon has wishes and desires. Most of them will require the acquiescence of some and outright submission of most. That is part of grandiosity. It is that the thinking is in terms of the grandiose. All must submit, for the mighty I, me, my is in your presence. All must submit to my wishes and dreams. It is like having an inborn Caligula or Nero crying out and demanding to be heard and accounted for. As the grandiosity inflates further, frightening things take place as the deep inner anti-self further disconnects from any rational or verifiable reality. In its drive for super grandiosity, which is the eternal heroic quest of every ultra-narcissist anyway, isn't it? By what possible rational right can any person rape, molest, murder a fellow human being? How is it even possible that a rational being could or would take upon himself or herself the pretended authority over life and death? This seems no less than an outright challenge to the very authority which holds the atomic matter of this universe together. Very profoundly ignorant. Indeed, it is the pot yelling at the potter, "Why hast thou made me thus and so?" The ego must be inflated far beyond my capacity to understand, or even pretend to understand, until I find myself captured by the dragon and acting out my own inner script run out of control, and then being forced to realize that in the final analysis, I really am not all that different. Then one realizes just how quick this dragon within us is to seize upon even the most fleeting and momentary things, to suddenly come flying out of nowhere in his full fury, angry at having been held back even for a moment, and now larger and more forceful than ever, and fully visible to all but the dullest-witted, for all the world to see you in your radiant splendor as the dragon within comes flying in at high speed out of nowhere, and suddenly the perpetrator acts upon his or her basest instincts and suddenly reaches out and grabs, immobilizes, and takes those things to which it simply does not and never will have any right to whatsoever. Such that it is a most daring thing for the dragon to do, as he openly courts disaster, but with panache and relish, because, as you look just a little bit closer, you'll first see that he is smiling at you, and then you'll notice a glimmer as you look up into his dragon eye, and you will be immobilized, unable to escape, because the dragon only smiles when he knows there is no way out for his next prey. The outrageous, shocking, totally criminal act is suddenly and forcibly carried out, as if by compulsion, with reason having been suspended temporarily, or maybe even permanently, dependent upon later outcomes as he gets away with his crime and begins to perfect his ability to take more fruits to which he is not entitled, simply by the taking of them in stealth. For how few actually are equipped to resist total force of will? Very few indeed, I should think.